On Popcorn Talks, I Talk Movies, we're talking dysfunction, not the problem, the movie, next.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
Hello, that intro, I love it. I feel so regal and royal right now, I guess. Hi, this is I Talk Movies here on Popcorn Talk Network. I am your host, James Law Jr. Of course, you can follow me at all the interwebs. Yeah, I said interwebs at James Law Jr. And of course, this podcast is on iTunes and on YouTube and everything that has Popcorn Talk on it. My guest today, we're talking about a movie that's coming out, that's actually available for pre-order on iTunes, and it's coming out VOD September 17th.
Yep, VOD, cable, nationwide, yes. Digital platforms, yes. You name it, we got it.
So, both my guests are impressive. One is an impressive actor who's been in just about everything. You also were on an episode of Days of Our Lives when they were blowing up Stefano DeMiro's body. I saw that episode, and you were the guy who was like, yeah, we're blowing up that building over there.
Yeah, I was that guy.
I saw that's one of my... It's a big thing. Stefano DeMiro is a big character.
I like that, man. You know, women like men in a uniform.
yes, they do. And some men. And also, he's a producer, director, and writer. He founded Exertion Films. Can I get the word out?
Exertion Films.
And also... We have the editor, producer, a director, a writer, documentary filmmaker who's joining us too, who directed the film. They work together and collaborate. It is David Bianchi and Ryan LeMasters.
Hey!
He did the clapping for you. Yay, clapping. Okay, the film is done, right?
Yes.
It's done, ready to go. Do you feel better? The film is done.
That aspect, yes.
Yes, because it's a lot of work.
Yes, that especially when you're on a low budget like we were, it... takes a lot of time, a lot of manpower, and the time is what is ultimately the only thing that you can get away with that doesn't cost as much because it's our own time. And what it forces the film to be, 2 years after shooting it, yeah. Now we're finally able to get it out to the world.
Out to the world, yes. The film is called All Out Dysfunction, that's with a K. You guys know that for sure. And we're going to show you the trailer right now so you get an idea of what you'll be seeing.
Six people with nothing in common. Meet the sex pod.
Hey, boys. Where was I?
Meet the addict.
Wait till you guys see this.
Meet the landlady.
Shut the goddamn porn.
Meet the misfit.
Buenos dias, mamita.
The germaphobe.
Smell sex, then sex is airborne.
And the pervert.
Give it to you in the style of an orangutan.
Living together, all in one house.
I am strong like spear.
Wow.
What's my name?
And one of them has an idea.
I thought I'd throw a party here tonight.
What I care about is my money and my time.
You need my help, and I want half.
So now what are you going to do about this old lady, Clarell?
I don't know. Can we knock her out or something?
What about Clarell?
Scooter said he was going to take care of it. It'll be fine.
Difference a dysfunctional day makes. All out dysfunction. Yeah, baby. Coming soon.
Okay, his film looks crazy. Okay, I'm going to read something that Ryan said. I'm going to try to read this. I thought it was very interesting.
It's clearly a film for the children.
Yeah, this is for eight and under. Yes, okay, this is what Ryan says. One of your statements you said. As a filmmaker, I have long been fascinated with the darker side of life and the human aptitude to mask imperfections. That's why I created this film. I wanted to show that life is not easy, and many times we need a little help from something. So this is a dark kind of... Explain what the summary of this movie is.
I'll jump in. All Out Dysfunction, it's the story of six dysfunctional Hollywood types that all live in this massive mansion. And the only thing that ties them together is they all have rooms for rent that they rent from this character, Clarell, who's played by the wonderful Melinda Dickey. And so it really is a fun, dark, comedic examination of the underbelly of Hollywood. Like, where does the PA live? You know, in this particular case, you have a Gore-FX makeup artist. You have an MIT MIT sort of Punjabi grad who's been transplanted into LA. You have a Juilliard germaphobe who I play. You have a webcam sort of up-and-coming adult starlet. You also have played by Dan Sanders Joyce, who's this guy Gator Paw, who's a gore effects makeup artist, who's a house handyman. Am I missing anyone? And Jen Pinto. We got Jen Pinto in there. I think I got everybody right.
Carrie.
And also Ranjit and Carrie, and she's a bulimic sort of runway model chick who's hooked on coke. And so you put all these people in one place, and it's like the ensemble piece gone completely pear-shaped. You know, it's like – it's almost
and
like
– you wrote it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This came from your mind.
Yes, yes, it did.
Okay,
yes,
I just want to make sure everybody knows this. This came from your mind.
Yeah, it came from
– each character you just named came from that brain of yours.
Yeah, yeah. It started out about now almost 7.5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I first came to this house because a friend of mine was living at the house, and he's like, yo, you got to come to the fucked up mansion and see the fucked up mansion. I'm like, what are you talking about? Guy I went to film school with. It's for real.
Oh.
So I go over there, and he's literally renting a room in this house. I was like, yo, and this is like a compound. This is a complex that looks like where David Koresh burned people. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, yo, I got to make a movie here. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it. So that was the inspiration. So I sat poolside some years ago, and I was on a BlackBerry at the time, and I just started punching in character descriptions. Like, I started thinking about it like a movie breakdown in casting. Like, character name, okay, give me 3 sentences on this person. Give me 3 sentences on this person. And then that's how it started.
Wow, okay. And then, so now how did you go to him and say, I want to make this movie about these fucked up people in a film? I mean, like you said, okay, Ryan, because you guys worked together before, obviously.
Yeah.
So you went to him and said, what'd you say?
Well, me and Ryan had worked on a documentary called Outspoken that I directed, and I needed help finishing that. And so we met through a mutual, now lost friend who put us together, and he cut it up and so on. So we had a relationship, and his first two short films, Our Vows and Susan's Remembrance, I helped him write and also produce those. So we had an ongoing relationship working as him as a director and me as a producer in short films.
Yeah.
And I brought it. I wrote it with Ryan in mind.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I wrote it knowing that, like, this is something I want to bring to Ryan because I wanted to write the movie for this place because I wanted to come up with a story that was sort of like manageable production-wise, that was all sort of one location that we could do on a micro budget conceivably and that we could all sort of collaborate and put our best, you know, knives into the fire and make a movie. So when I first came up with the idea, I just brought it right to him. I was like, dude, this is something that we should definitely be doing. We can't make short films anymore. We got to step up our street cred. And that from the moment I think I brought it to you to when we actually shot it was what? 6 years? Seven.
Yeah, when you brought it to me, we didn't get to production for about 3 years after that. So
wow. So when he brought it to you, when you started reading these, you started reading the breakdown, what did you think?
Well, when he first brought the very original script he brought, had a lot more characters.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And it was just one of those things where it had even crazier stuff going on, but it was just one of those things where it was like, Dave, we got to reel this back. It wasn't that it wasn't interesting. It was just like we don't have enough time to incorporate these stories, so we're gonna have to start killing some of your darlings, and then take aspects from this character and throw them into that character.
Oh, okay.
Because there was just too much. Because it's like, okay, we see this person, but we only see him for 4 pages. And it's like, that's not going to work.
Yeah,
you're wasting screen time on it. So then David went through and really hashed out a lot, and then finally got it down to six characters?
That and my first draft of the script was 9 characters that were living in this house. And then through his notes and years of us going back and forth on it, I sized it down to 6. And as a screenwriter, that was really hard for me
because
I wrote some really rich textured characters. And they were all incredibly unique with their own unique distinctive voices. But, you know, Ryan brought up a really good argument that, like, look, this is going to be a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
How are we going to get the audience to identify the characters? How are we going to get through exposition?
Yeah.
How are we going to get through, you know, the inciting incident, the climax, the rising action, the climax, and the resolution on 9 characters in 90 minutes?
Yeah.
And have the audience still care about these people and connect to them? So, you know, through that... you know, that's how we ended up with 6.
Because I feel like with this kind of movie, you have to make sure that people know what each character does, what their purpose is, before you go into the incident or whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get to know them.
Sure.
So 6 is, I think it's much more manageable, I think, than 9.
And even then, it's still difficult because you know, when you watch something like that, you figure the first 15 minutes of our film is just trying to introduce these characters and get an understanding of where they're coming from, because, you know, it's a whole new world to the viewer. And you have to legitimize a little bit as to why do I even care about this person, or why are they in this house? And so obviously you don't want to just spill everything at once, but you've got to at least start addressing some of these questions.
Yeah, definitely.
And let me add in on that is that, like, the first two films that Ryan directed that I produced were Our Vows and Susan's Remembrance, which are two very dark short films. You know, in one, it's about a crackhead. I play a crackhead, and it's very dark. And Susan's Remembrance is a dark detective schizophrenic drama. So I knew that I can go dark and I can go deep, and Ryan was going to dig it. Like, me and him, we like the same movies. We like dark texture. We like examining the human condition, you know. And so when I said to him, I was like, okay, so what if we did something where he snorts way too much ketamine and he blows chunks all over a guy? He's like, fuck yeah. You know?
Sure. Well, that's
right. You know, so I knew I could get away with a lot. And he threw a lot of dark.
Yeah. I tend to get into a little trouble because I'm one that's like, let's push it darker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that gets me. There's a lot of times, I mean, even on this one, I'm trying to remember a couple of the things that we did where it was – there's a scene with David in it that we put in where you see his character after this ketamine experience has happened. He wakes up and it was like, well, what happened? And I'm just like, let's go dark. We're going dark with this. And, you know, there were a couple people like, ooh, that's a little, it's just like, hey, I want that.
Must it go big, go home.
Tell him about it, man. Tell him. Yeah. Tell him about the scene.
Basically, he wakes up and he finds himself laying next to two young girls who you discover earlier on are not of age. And the whole time you're just kind of like, what's going on? And we don't even specifically say what happened.
Yes.
And mind you, my character's a complete germaphobe.
Yeah, I see that.
A complete germy.
And the next scene, you see him in a bathroom and he is freaking out and he's cleaning himself off, and there are blood, and of course it's down in his nether regions. So I mean, there's no nudity, but it's there for you to realize, like, oh no.
Well, like, sometimes I like that. I like that sometimes where you don't see it, but it's heavily implied.
That's where I come from in a lot of what I like to do. Like throughout this whole thing, even when we've got our distributor, the thing that we kind of pointed out that they kind of forgot was, we're like, you realize there's no nudity in this film. And they were like, oh, you're right, there isn't. As you're watching it, in your mind, you think that you see nudity, but there's no nudity.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, you feel really dirty when you watch the movie at times. And, you know, we made that creative choice in the beginning that, like, the subject matter and the writing is so adult, and some of the circumstances are so far to the left and so rated R that us showing you an areola isn't going to make the situation any dirtier.
No.
It's, you know, the mind is dirtier than the eyes. It's almost like I can watch two people having sex, or I can hear them having sex through the wall.
Yes.
And the aspect of that that does too is, from a director's standpoint, I don't want to be spending time with an actor or an actress trying to explain to them, like, don't worry, I know we can see this in person, but it's not going to be on film. I'd rather them be comfortable and not have to deal with, I don't do nudes. It's like, don't worry, we're not doing nudes. And, you know, and the last thing I want to do is put any of my actors into a position where they're uncomfortable, because then it just makes it very difficult to get what you need out of them, as well as can really kind of affect your story or your scene.
On top of that, it also limits the talent pool. You know, especially if you're, if you're Michael Mann and you're doing a $150 million movie, anybody's going to take the clothes off.
I'll take my clothes off.
But if you're doing a micro-budget film, you're doing a micro-budget film on, say, a SAG ULB contract or whatever, somebody's getting paid, you know, X amount of dollars a day, you really shorten your talent pool. Because girls are going to be like, I'm not taking my clothes off for that much money. Get the fuck out of here.
Exactly.
You know? And our distributor actually patted us on the back and said, well, you know, we always think, as independent filmmakers, they're like, look, you need guns, you need sex, you need nudity to get distribution. But we don't have nudity, and thinking that that's going to be a power to get us distribution. Our distributor said, you know what, it's actually going to work to your advantage. Because a lot of these cable providers won't push back.
Right, they'll show it.
Because it will be a selling point for us.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it is rated R.
Yes.
Okay. It's not rated.
It's not officially rated. Yeah, but that costs money, and we don't have that.
Right.
So.
But, so just give people an idea of,
it's R.
R.
not PG-13. Yeah, no,
it's R. There are words in there that you could never get away with PG-13. Ever.
Yes. I have a few of them.
Speaking of words, great fact. Yes. Great fact.
Tell me.
We did an actual fuck count in the film.
Okay.
And we, according to Wikipedia, has a breakdown chart of the words that have the most usages of the word fuck in them.
Yes.
And we come in ranked at approximately number 4.
Oh, okay.
With, I think, 3.34 uses of the word per minute.
Per minute.
And I'm really excited about that stat. Like, actually, Wolf of Wall Street's on that list. Oh, okay. Like, Mill by Mouth. Like, there's some good films on there.
Like, well, you know, they're breaking the record. Yeah, our ratings. I can see the top part of that. It's like not showing it. I think the font's too big. Yes, because I know I work with obviously I'm TV and radio. Smoking gets an R rating. Does it really?
Does it
smoking?
Really?
Automatically gets an R rating now.
Wow. Oh,
so in Saving Mr. Banks, he's always putting out cigarettes. He's never smoking them.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry,
that's
man.
Interesting.
You know what?
Wow.
That is. I'm sorry. That is just so completely fucked. I mean, in my mind, look, we're a nation that's based and founded by Puritanism, so I get it. But like, since when is like shooting somebody in the chest PG-13?
Right.
But showing a woman's full frontal is rated R. Smoking
cigarettes.
Yeah. It's all. Wrong.
Well, it's funny. I do. So I have a couple TV shows, and I got in trouble for saying titty too much.
Oh wow!
I got things said. You said your titty quota. So.
Oh Lord!
But I can say breasts. I couldn't say titty.
Wow.
For some reason.
Well, yeah. If smoking gets you an R rating, then huffing nitrous is definitely going to get you there.
Oh, yeah, yes, so. Yes.
Yeah, or huffing gasoline.
So this film, we're going to see all kinds of stuff in this film.
Yeah, it starts off as a comedy through the beginning, and as you progress, it's the comedic element that gets to the beginning. But as David knew, I'm very much I love drama. I love dark drama, and As soon as our character Clorel gets chloroformed, we basically go into the basement and it's dark, and that's when you get into the rave sequence, which has still got comedic elements to it, but it is very much a drama driven that takes us to.
I can't wait to watch this because I love dark.
Yeah,
I mean we've actually been told that it's almost a new genre of sort of film, because it has a very cult sort of sensibility about it. It's got that gritty indie feel, which is exactly what we were going for. Mm-hmm. And kudos to Ryan for directing a hell of a movie, because you know, for the toys and resources that he had as a director. Now, mind you, we shot 96 pages in 11 days.
Wow.
We had 2 12-page days back to back, and we shot single camera. So the amount of pressure that was on everybody was immense.
That is crazy.
And best part is we didn't even go into overtime except for the last day.
You did? Yeah.
No,
that's good for you.
And the only reason we went into overtime that day was because I completely forgot one shot that we had to basically reset up.
Oh, you forgot.
Yeah, and then the sad thing is now I look back and we didn't even use the shot.
So, yeah. Filmmaking.
And also be advised, it's like the film is always evolving. Films are always evolving for all you out there that are trying to make films. It's like we shot the film and then we started cutting it to the script and it didn't work.
Yeah.
It just didn't work. Yeah. So we brought in a talented guy, a collaborator of ours, Daniel J. Pico, who came in and he's a great director. He's a great editor. He threw in some great ideas and we just butchered the film and basically completely changed the pacing of it and the construction of it.
Yeah.
And then we looked at it and we said, okay, now we have story gaps missing.
Yeah.
So then we were able to, about 6 months after we finished principal photography or so, we went back and then we scheduled 2 full-on 12-hour days and wrote new scenes and filled some story gaps to flush out the story, get it where it is now.
The guy who spoke earlier, if you guys don't know, his name is James. He's an engineer producer here. He's also a filmmaker too. So he's also another filmmaker. He's made a documentary or so. So he knows, that's what he's telling the little stuff. He knows all about that kind of stuff.
Shout out James.
Yeah, he knows how all this stuff works too. So, I mean, 11 days.
Yes.
So you had to be, I mean, as producers, as directors, right, you had to be really on top of everything.
Yes.
So you hired a cast and they could deliver, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Well, it came down to the casting, but what really helped a lot is we had our co-producer, Christina Jolie. Really, like she was really the nuts and bolts as far as dealing with contracts, dealing with, basically because of the low budget, she was basically kind of a UPM, unit production manager and production coordinator all in one. Because when he's on camera and I'm behind the camera, there's nothing.
You're busy.
Yeah, there's we can sit there and say, oh, we're going to worry about this, but we can't. And she's sitting there plugging away in her office, and then she's making runs and dealing with all the PAs. Like, literally, she was manning the beast. And
shout out to her.
Christina Jolie is amazing.
Christina.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to Christina.
She to her forever.
Yeah, she literally is. She literally was and still is.
The glue.
She's a bridge over troubled water.
Yeah.
You know, I started working with Christina on a small short film called I Want Him Dead that I produced, and then she came in, and it was a short comp, but it was a big short film. It was like a $30,000 short.
Okay.
And then she also helped us produce Susan's Remembrance, and so we had also a working relationship. And, you know, Ryan brings up a really, really good point that, you know, when we're in production, you know, you have to be as prepared as possible. And, you know, even to our cast, I remember being in callbacks, and independent filmmakers take note to this. It's like, you know what you're up against as a producer. Mm-hmm. So we said to these cast members in callbacks, we said, look, you're going to need to work 12-hour days. We're going to need you available on these dates. You're going to have to potentially use your own wardrobe. You're going to maybe have to do your own stunts. It's going to be 115 degrees. The food is not going to be so glamorous, but you know, you're going to be taken care of. You're going to have to deal with some really intense independent film environments. And if you say no to any of those questions, I'm sorry, we can't hire you. Oh, and we're also going to need at least 2 full-on rehearsal days.
Yeah.
Because we rehearsed everything offset, like you would do it in theater. And so every actor showed up completely off book and physically rehearsed. The muscle memory was already set. So that the only rehearsal that had to happen was Ryan and Jeff Soljaberg, our cinematographer, when camera needed to rehearse to figure out where the movements were going to happen.
Right. And that's something I've always enjoyed doing, doing the rehearsals before is, for me, it makes sense because luckily being behind the camera and having worked with that myself, I can actually look and be like, okay, there's not enough room for a camera right here. I'm not going to put my DP through this. But you know, usually the DP can be there for those walkthroughs. But like in this case, Jeffrey was already busy because he's, you know, he's 728. So he works on sets all the time with lighting.
Yeah.
So when he's doing that and not doing his cinematography, you know, I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, you need to take a day off of work just to come here to do something that I can already fill you in and take photos and be like, okay. And it's just a matter of, as long as the actors know where they're going to be and then they can kind of gain that knowledge of where they're going to be, it's much easier for the camera because when we get ready to shoot it, we do a quick walkthrough. They already know what they're going to do. Now they're just kind of going through the memory of the motion. And then Jeff is able to look and see, oh, okay, this is where we're going to set up it based off of the conversations I've had with him. And he's, you know, and that's what made Jeff great was when we showed up, he knew what I was wanting. Yeah. And so it was just we were able to fly a lot quicker. And then of course, any production, there's going to be unforeseen things that show up and you're like, okay, this isn't what we thought it would be. What do we do? And Jeff's really good on the fly of saying, I got an idea. Yeah, and he's always making these little concoctions. Like one, he made this nice little light box that he's just like, this will save our ass.
It was literally a frame of 2x with 2 9-volt batteries and a dimmer on it and an LED panel. You know, and to further his thought is that, like, going into this kind of movie, people say, how'd you guys do it? Well, because we know what we're doing. You know, I mean, Ryan, to his kudos, is that he's an incredibly technical guy. He was also the Steadicam operator on this film, and he's also a gaffer himself.
He's an editor.
When Jeff Soljaberg, our cinematographer, isn't around, he can look around and he can see what Jeff would see, so Jeff can know going into it, it's covered, right? And so, and then myself, as a producer, like, I know the independent tricks. I've spent my career as a producer making nothing look like something. So it's like, from a staging perspective, we know these little tricks. And then Christina, you know, a very experienced producer, also knows how to foresee logistical problems before they happen.
Oh yeah, she's throwing red flags left and right for us. She's like, don't do this. It's gonna, and you know, that saved us because there are a lot of things. I think it was in pre-pro that was it pre-pro or was it like maybe the day before when we were doing like walkthroughs? She's like, yeah, that can't be there. That's copyright. Like, she'd be looking at things that would be in frame. She's like, if that's in there, we're going to have nightmares. Like, she was able to just kind of wipe a lot where we're just like, yeah, but it's just, and she's like, I'm telling you, if it's not, if you don't have that photographer written, she's like, we're going to be dealing with a shitstorm of paperwork. And it's like, no to Christina, that's coming off. Okay. Like, you know, it's like, all right, art department, we got to replace that with something that we can do elsewhere. Like, so she saved us so much time and money because of her knowledge on that sort of thing that even I didn't really think. I was like, oh yeah, you know, we can always just get them to write off. And her thing's like, do you really want to spend that time sending letters to a company that says, oh yeah, what if they say no, then you have footage you can't use.
And yeah, so, I mean, we you make mistakes always along the way. Mm-hmm. Like we had moments in the dialogue where the character says, hey, would you like a Percocet? Well, you know, we shot it and we thought the scene was great, but then again, we got the post-production, we realized, wait a second, Percocet is a brand name.
Yeah, she's like, you can't do that for that and usage. So, you can't do that. So like,
and because we were misusing the product in the scene, there's no way we're gonna get rights to it, so we cut it, you know. And that happens, you know.
But that's where we had to have a third eye, because with us being on set and dealing with that, whereas Christina was dealing with paperwork and all the logistics and the things that it's just like we couldn't put our attention to because we had to deal with what's in front of the camera, that really saved us, because I don't know what it would have been like if we would have had this and then her not be able to say, that's not, because then we would have been pushing it through. And then when when it came to getting errors and omissions, we would have been in a lot of trouble, because they would have been like, it's not going to fly. You guys need to recut that. And that's just a nightmare.
And make no mistake about it. Yes, this is a micro budget indie film, but we managed this thing like, I mean, if you saw it from the outside, you'd be like, holy shit, this is like a $1 to $2 million set. Right. I mean, we had almost 400 people work on this thing from beginning to where we are now. Wow. So make no mistake about it. This was not a small production by any stretch of the imagination.
We have to mention Ron Jeremy. We have to mention Ron Jeremy. Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, you gotta mention him. Like,
yeah, the hedgehog.
So when you wrote this, did you have a porn star in mind, or did you want an iconic LA image?
No, you know what, man? You can't, in my mind, I was talking to Ryan when I'm writing the story. I wrote a porn in the living room. They're shooting a porn in the movie. Okay. I wrote a porn in the movie, right? Okay. And so I'm like, you can't make a movie in the San Fernando Valley at a mansion and not have some dicks and some moaning and some groaning.
Yes.
So I said, like, look, then we're just going to cast real porn stars, right?
Okay,
To play themselves in the movie. So the great Bridget B., who was a multiple AVN Award winner. Every man in contemporary America has probably lost at least one load to her. That's my homie. Shout out, Bridget. Bridget's in it playing herself. And then Ron, for example, Ron didn't come in until after we shot the movie.
Okay.
Because one of my investors is a friend of a friend and blah, blah, blah. And we had completed the picture. And so we have Ron doing a fun cameo where he's actually like one of the John Does composited onto a screen, jerking off to one of our leads, Jen Pinto, who plays Pleasure, this webcam porn chick.
Okay, okay.
You know, so it's great. So we got him like, you know, looking into
it. Well, he's a trained professional. Oh, yeah. He knows what to do, obviously.
And I will say this. Ron's a hell of an actor.
I know he is.
He's a great actor. I was actually really surprised how on game he was and how joyful and how, you know, upbeat he was. And he's like, oh, you want to go again? Okay, cool. Let's do another take. And then, bam, he'd hit it.
Did you ever see his documentary? It was fascinating.
Oh, yeah. He's a fascinating guy. Yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
But he can't. When he can act, if they gave him a chance, he would act.
I really think that somebody's going to walk out on a limb and he's going to be like a Philip Seymour Hoffman kind of character in a Sundance smasher.
Right. And get props for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. And so, I mean, so when you decided Ron Jeremy was the one. So you're like, okay, we're going to get
him. Well, actually, it wasn't even that I decided. It was like Ron Jeremy, like, came around our periphery, and the movie was already shot.
Yeah.
And I called Ryan. I'm like, bro, I might have a chance to get Ron in this movie. In this movie. How are we going to make it work?
Okay.
You know, and we figured it out.
He gave you money. That's how it works. We know Ron. Ron is no shame about that. He has no shame about that.
That's for sure.
That's all. I just want to get that, because like, he makes a cameo in the film.
Yep.
So you guys, what are when you guys work together, especially on this film, you mentioned some of each other's strengths, but what is really one of his strengths and vice versa for him that makes you work so well together, especially like on this film? It really worked.
You want to go first?
You go.
Oh, okay. I think one of Ryan's strengths is that he comes from one. He's not certified.
Electrician for like lighting. Okay. It's not like I went and took a set, you know, for commercial lighting. It's just lighting for productions.
Okay.
So, not only is he technical visually and technical with a camera and understands post production, he also understands electricity. So he walks on a set and he sees things that most people wouldn't see. And I think that he also has a demeanor about him that is very reserved. And I think that comes in. Oh, anybody fucking compared to me. And that I think for him comes in handy, but also because of, you know, a lot of his experience in lighting and concert lighting and flying, trussing and stuff like that. He's no stranger to hard work. So it's like, you know, we're both workaholics and we'll go 24 hours. We literally went 24 hours straight, no sleep, working on this movie at times. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us is any stranger to that. Yeah. So I think that definitely his technical aptitude and his work ethic are absolutely fortes.
For Ryan. And for you about him?
Well, the thing about David is he's got a very uncanny way, but somehow you'll be like, oh, we're going to need this. And he'll be like, I got that. I'll get it. And the next thing you know, you get a phone call. Dude, I got this person. He's in the wing. He's all about it. He's in. I sold him on it. And you're just like, what? And he's just like, yeah, he wants to meet. He's going to be in it. Whether you need someone as mundane as a PA or someone as, I need this. I need an actor to do this. No problem, man. Give me an hour. I'll get it back to you. And it really worked well because he would find these, whether it was one of our short films or, you know, Dysfunction, he'd always just find, like, it'd just be like, hey, man, I don't know where I'm going to find this. Don't worry, man. I got this. And then,
seriously?
Yeah.
David could talk me into anything. I swear to God. You're so infectious and so, like, yeah. I've been dealing with him for, like, last week or so. I'm totally, like, whatever he tells me, I'll just do it.
The challenge with David is you have to learn how to apply the brakes. Like pushing the brake and then being like, okay, don't push too hard, but you got to push the brake. Like, don't come to a complete stop. But
I believe with
holy
him,
cow,
yes.
Slow down. You know, yes. Like that's the trick of it. But
rambunctious. He can tell me to do anything. I would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, you have that personality.
But you know, man, it's like, you know, there's different elements of being producers. Like if you look at our trilogy, which is Cinematic Artistry, as Christina Jolie, Exertion Films, which is me, and then Gravant Pictures, which is Ryan here. You know, Ryan brings the technical aptitude. A lot of the gear and his logistical know-how of working around sets and production. Christina, she brings the numbers, the mathematics, and the legal aptitude. And then me, I bring high creative color intensity, and I wrangle people. I bring people to the stage. Right, I just get people to show up. I get people inspired, and they drive. And then Christina, once the people show up, Christina sort of compartmentalizes them, and then Ryan tells them what to do and where to go.
There you go, team.
Makes sense.
It totally makes sense. A village.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and producing is just getting people to show up.
Yep, I know.
You know,
it's rad. I can't wait to see the film. The film looks like it's going to be something dark and funny, which I like.
It's hilarious.
I know. I can't wait. I want to see some blood. I want to see all kind of stuff.
Oh, shout out to Yul Spencer too. He murdered it in this movie.
Okay, Yul Spencer.
Yeah,
Yul Spencer.
Yul Spencer was one of those where it's like, dude, I need someone to fill this role, and we couldn't find it. And like, we thought we'd found a guy in casting, and it was just like, this role requires a comedian. Like, we really came down to it. It was like, we need a comedian to fill this role because they're the only people that are going to be able to have the chops and the improv skills to be able to go on the fly and just change things up, but to stay within that frame. And Yul showed up, and by golly, it was his birthday, and it was a long day, but the best part was, I remember Yul looked at me and he goes because he was wearing a suit, and you know, it was 100 degrees outside. And he's just like, I remember we even at one point were like, you know what, let's get you to take that jacket off because you're going to die. So we literally threw it into the script where he just holds it up, and then a PA just walks right by and takes it out of his hand. So that way we could just be like, dude, we don't want you to die on us tonight. And even through that whole thing, he's just like, I remember he looked, he goes, Ryan, I know I'm sweating, but you've been in that steady cam the whole time too. He's like, you've got to be hurting. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm wearing shorts, man. I'm good.
Yeah, you're, you know? You're fine. Yeah.
Yeah, but he killed the role, and he owns the scene. It's he does a really, like, Yul is very talented.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of show-stopping performances in this film. Good. You know, as independent filmmakers, I can take pride in the fact that now I think we gave it. We tapped Hartley to a lot of people. A lot of people got their SAG cards on our film.
Good. Oh, good.
A lot of people got SAG cards on our film.
Oh, very good.
But we also were able to open up the door to expose really talented people that otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity to play in an actor's script because it was written by an actor.
Yeah. The one thing I really want to point out too is just because, you know, people are going to look at it and they're going to see a cast and they're not going to recognize 99% of the people in the film. It's because that's just the way the nature of the beast. But I have to impress upon people, they are going to see some performances of people that are really good, knowing that these are no-namers, but these are people that I feel are going to really do well in the future.
Yeah, check it out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and people's careers are always developing. You know, Rene Rosato, for example, is now a series regular on Major Crimes.
There you go.
And,
another great.
You know, I'm doing a bunch of TV. I mean, our careers are continuing to grow. Yeah. So, you know, I think that we have a good eye. And we picked an incredible cast that is irreplaceable.
Good.
You know?
Good. So tell folks in that camera over there what they can do to find the film. It's available for iTunes.
Yes,
you can go
to iTunes. You can go to Apple TV. Either way, look up All Out Dysfunction, and it will pop right up, and you can pre-order it. We would greatly appreciate it, as obviously anybody that put their blood, sweat, and tears into this would just truly love you to see it. And, you know, even if it's not the type of film you would normally watch, just give it a try and enjoy. And if you don't enjoy it, well, you know, I guarantee you'll at least walk away saying, I enjoyed performances of at least this person or that person, and then you can search them out and find other stuff that they've been in or are currently going to be in.
Yeah, and to echo that, go to iTunes.
Yeah.
Go on Apple TV. These are known to most people. All Out Dysfunction, available now. Pre-order now. So the reason that we really need you to pre-order is because pre-ordering is really going to give us the opportunity to push us up the rankings of iTunes so that we can, upon release on September 17th, potentially get enough sales that we could actually be on the homepage of iTunes Movies, which is going to give us exposure to millions of people. So, you know, just find it in your heart to support independent film because, you know, this is really blood, sweat, and tears. You know, none of us are Hollywood royalty. You know, we just work really, really hard to try to bring a new art form to people and, you know, support everything that we're trying to do because we want to entertain you guys at the same time. And also, caveat, if you pre-order today, you don't get charged until September 17th.
The other thing, too, is if you go to the Facebook, All Out Dysfunction on Facebook, or is it the Dysfunction?
It's the Dysfunction
on Facebook. If you go there. There are some scenes on there that we're rolling out once a week from the film, little 1 minute clips, so you can kind of get a good taste of what you're actually going to see.
Yeah,
I'm going to pre-order it.
Please,
please do,
and spread the word. We are going to have a big premiere in Los Angeles coming up in September, which we're really excited about, a theatrical screening.
So let me know, and I'll post it on my pages.
Awesome.
That's
awesome.
Because now we're connected. So
that's awesome.
You just tell me. I'll post on my pages.
Yeah, and September 17th, it's going to be VOD. It's going to be cable. It'll be nationwide. You'll be able to see it. Support independent film. Support independent artists, please.
Yes.
I totally agree with that. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You guys are infectious. I completely anything you want to do next, I'll do it too. Sure, why not? I'm in. I'm all in. But I'm going to pre-order the film. I'm going to do it.
Great.
So you guys,
Ryan, I got a guy who knows a guy.
Exactly. Now you know a guy who's a guy who's a guy and a guy. Yes, exactly. I love it. I do. I love that. We always need people like that in our lives, too, who can handle things. We always need that in our lives.
Yeah.
Yes, somebody can do that. You can reach into their pocket and pull somebody out. We do. This is iTalk Movies. Of course, here on Popcorn Talk, you can follow us on iTunes and YouTube. See iTunes, where you can find the movie to pre-order it. We can tie it all in together. And you can follow me at James Lott Jr. on all social media platforms. Thanks for having me tonight and having them. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.